WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Greetings and welcome to WrestleSpective. I'm Jason Mann. And before we begin the show, I want to talk about our new sponsor, RotoReels.com, which offers professional wrestling DVDs and downloads from Mexico, Japan, United States, and all around the world. Includes best ofs, sets of professional wrestlers, and lots of great stuff. So check them out, RotoReels.com. And joining me today for the very first time is Luke Johnson of WrestleFeed. Luke, how you doing?
Pretty good, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. And today we are going to talk about the fastest and most furious Royal Rumble ever, as Vince McMahon put it. It is the Royal Rumble 1995, 60-second intervals, which is quite makes it for quite a fast pace and makes for kind of a different vibe for the Rumble. Of all the ones that I've reviewed and watched, this one definitely, I think, has some distinctions in it, which we'll definitely get into.
Oh, absolutely. There's certain things that happened with this Rumble that didn't happen in any other time. I do remember them doing another year that was 90-second intervals.
Yeah.
But even that felt noticeably slower than this.
Right. Yeah, 94 was 90 seconds. That was the first year, I believe, that it was 90 seconds. And I think most of the Rumbles since have been between 90 seconds and 2 minutes. They're kind of loose on the intervals, you know, depending on time. They'll shave some seconds off. They'll even have different ones depending on what's going on in the match. They're not quite – I think they were a little more disciplined about keeping the intervals at least pretty close consistently, you know, during the same Rumbles, you know, at least as my memory serves. I'm sure somebody can point out to me an instance where they didn't do that. But yeah, I do think that this is noticeably different. It's not really considered one of the better. It's really considered one of the worst Rumbles of all time. It's certainly watchable. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not like there's a whole lot of going on. And that fast pace means that there just isn't, like, storytelling stuff that they normally do during the Rumble that they're able to do because it's just so fast before the next guy comes in.
Right. And I've noticed again with this one is that you'll have a lot of moments where there end up being a lot of guys in the ring because they come out so fast.
Yeah.
And then they've got to clear everything out. And so it just all the eliminations seem to happen at once.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Pamela Anderson is there. She is there to celebrate with the winner, and then she is going to escort the winner to the main event of WrestleMania 11, which actually she does not do because she's apparently an evil, vicious Canadian, and they do not follow the rules.
I vaguely remember there being some reason why she accompanied Diesel, and Shawn Michaels was accompanied by Jenny McCarthy, but damned if I can remember what it is right now.
Yeah, it's not. It's really not nothing that we need to we need to get into, but that's really super important. But I don't recall there being a reason. I just recall her just doing it because, you know, that's what they did. So, I think the lesson there is do not trust Pamela Anderson.
I think it's a safe lesson.
Okay, Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler are a commentary team. And we do get some good Vince-isms in here once in a while, which we'll definitely get into. Number one is Shawn Michaels, who Vince told us sort of had acted in a previous interview like he was proud of his numbers. So the idea that he's sort of fooling, was playing mind games there. But then Lawler points out that Shawn is proud of it in a sense because, you know, the idea that he wants to be number one so that he can go through the entire Rumble, which, of course, seems laughable at the time, but then ends up being what happens. And number two, we have the British Bulldog, who is looking a little peeved that he got his bad number. So he's not playing along with the, you know, looking for the challenge of going through everyone type thing, which is kind of weird since Michaels is the heel and Bulldog is babyface. You would think it would be normally the other way around, but, you know, that's sometimes that's just the way things go.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it is that Shawn Michaels, one of his primary character traits, was his massive ego. He would love coming out number one and lasting the whole time. British Bulldog didn't have that character hook, and so he might be a little more upset.
That's a good point. That's well said. Shawn does a lot of dancing as well, and I can sort of see why there was a certain segment of the fans that didn't really get into Shawn Michaels because of it's sort of like how people don't a certain segment of the fan just can't get into John Cena because John Cena is just he's cutesy and obnoxious and just, you know, kind of annoying. And Shawn Michaels had that, I think, amped up even more with the, you know, the sexy dancing and the gyrating and, you know, even more so. But there's sort of a similarities in who they appealed to and who they did not appeal to, even though in their prime, Cena appealed to a much larger audience than Michaels did.
That's true.
Yeah. So Shawn attacks in the corner quickly. We get a big back body drop by the Bulldog. Now, Bulldog very early gets him into a press slam, and despite Vince yelling over the top, over the top, over the top repeatedly, he does not toss him out. And I have a friend who, I don't know why, but every time that we – not every time we see each other, but many, many times when we see each other and we talk about wrestling, he talks about how mad he is that the British Bulldog did not eliminate Shawn Michaels here when he had the chance. He also says the same thing. I think Davey may have had Flair in a press in the 92 Rumble and also did not capitalize on that opportunity. So Davey maybe just not understand the Rumble very well. Davey not maybe the smartest guy ever either.
No, that's entirely possible. If Marty Jannetty had come out number two, you know Michaels would have gotten thrown out in that situation.
Yeah. And they would have done their running at each other and brawling thing because they did that a whole lot of times in Rumbles. They did it at least like four times, I think, maybe not four times, but they did it in 94. I'm pretty sure they did it in 92, and I think they did it in 96. So that would be three times at least. So
always fun.
Yes, it is always fun. Yeah. Although it always gets more sad and sad to see Marty. And wait, is he in this one? I forget now.
No.
He's not in this one. Never mind. I'm thinking of 94. It kind of gets sadder and sadder to see him later and later on his career as he's sort of still like wearing the rocker style outfits and just can't seem to move on. And of course, Shawn Michaels is, you know, is the champion and the big deal.
Right. I was heartbroken with the break up the Rockers. They were my favorite tag team, and I always sided with Marty Jannetty. So. It got tough to watch at times.
As you should have. I had the same sort of thing with Strikeforce. I was a big Strikeforce fan, and when they broke up, I was greatly saddened, and I always took Tito's side, even though at the time I liked Martel more. So, but the Strikeforce split up did not work as well for Rick Martel as the Rockers one did for Shawn Michaels.
No. Yep. It's Rick Martel, I don't think, maybe had that charisma that you need to be the main event star. He was a fantastic worker.
Yeah. I don't know. I always thought he was a pretty good fiery babyface. Like, I think he was a little underrated in that respect. He didn't have the interviews as well. And he was older, too. I mean, he was, you know, in his late 30s, early 40s by this time. So it wasn't the same position as Michaels. But, yeah. But certainly, yeah, he was not a guy who was going to make the main events. He was, you know, he basically made where he was going to make, and it worked out pretty well for him. So,
yeah, he did.
So we have, Davey gets a clothesline. Shawn does a big flip on it. Then he flips in the turnbuckle. A lot of Shawn flipping during this Royal Rumble, which is, you know, sort of what he does in the Rumble. That's sort of what he does everywhere. The big bumps and the big, exaggerated selling and so on and so forth. And, eventually, Bulldog runs into a boot as Shawn is sort of tied up in the ropes, so giving him a breather. Number three, we have Eli Blue, who is better known as one of the Harris twins. At this point, they're sort of like mountain men, and they have really long, bushy hair. and they are managed by Dutch Mantel, who I believe is like Uncle Zebekiah or something.
Yes, Uncle Zebekiah.
Uncle Zebekiah, there you go. Good on me remembering that. By the way, the managers do not stay at ringside this year. They do some of them. I forget if he went out there with Eli. He wasn't even around yet, but I'm not sure if he managed them the entire time. But
Eli came out alone.
Okay, very good. This is sort of a departure from several of the 90s years in which the managers did come out. But this year they do not. I guess maybe with the 60-second interval, they didn't want to clutter things up by having the managers out there too.
Right. It's not like there were that many managers in the company at the time. So.
That's true. There was Cornette, who I don't believe came out. I remember Captain Lou Albano and Afa come out with both the head shrinkers. That's really the only one I remember specifically.
I think Whippleman at least comes out, but then he always heads back right away.
That's right. Yes, you're right.
And yep. I think Cornette might do the same thing.
Okay. I don't remember seeing Cornette, but either way, they are not staying out there is the point. So,
no.
He kicks Davey in the corner, but Sean rakes his face. Pretty much, that's the highlight of that minute that they're in there. Number four, Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yes.
What can you say about Duke the Dumpster Drosy?
Duke is kind of the poster boy for what was wrong with the company in this era, and it's kind of unfair. Mm-hmm. He wasn't that bad a worker. He had a decent look. He had the size, but that gimmick is just silly, and you're not going to go anywhere with it.
Right. Wrestling garbage men is just not something that someone wants to get behind.
No, I think, if they could have done something a bit different with him, if maybe give him a manager or something,
yeah.
And of course... He might have been a good mid card, maybe a big man that a face heavyweight champion can feud with to look good.
Sure, yeah, if you could have seen if he'd have stuck around into like the mid to late 90s, like a Billy Gunn or a Road Dogg or a Bob Holly did, he could have been a guy who was successful in that era. They have obviously with the change of character, kind of like Triple H is. Character went from being the blue blood to being, the DX guy. I mean, it would have had to been more of a drastic change, but you get what I'm saying. If he had just kind of tweaked it like that, if he had been Triple D, then maybe he could have, maybe he could have been big star over that. Maybe he could have been, instead of Triple H, we could have had Triple D, boring us through main events through much of that.
And then marrying Stephanie McMahon.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So... somebody's got to write that as like an alternate wrestling history timeline or something. So
please do
get on that internet. Somebody do the work. So, Duke runs into, one of Eli's big boots pretty quick. He gets, Sean into a bear hug a little bit later, but then Sean rakes the eyes. Next number five is Jimmy Del Rey, who is one of Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, who is one of the heavenly bodies along with Tom Pritchard.
Yes, the Doctor of Desire, Tom Pritchard.
Yeah, so the heavenly bodies were pretty fun. They were mostly known for being in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which Cornette sort of had. Jim Cornette was the man behind Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but he also worked part-time for WWE through like 93, 94, 95. He was Yokozuna's manager he was Yokozuna's American spokesperson because Mr. Fuji was Yokozuna's manager.
Yeah.
Definitely want to get that right. That's an important distinction. There was some talent from Smoky Mountain that would appear in WWE and vice versa. And I think the Heavenly Bodies probably were the most accomplished Smoky Mountain team to do anything in WWE. I don't think they were ever tag champions, but they were, at least somewhat pushed and had some good matches with the Steiners and, a few other teams.
Right. They showed up on pay-per-views a lot, usually did the job. They never did win the titles, but. I didn't like them at the time, but as I've been watching these pay-per-views recently, I've really come to appreciate them because they're a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're great bumpers, and they're great. I mean, they're just a really consummate tag team. I mean, they really they do that 80s Southern style, kind of the Midnight Express type thing, you know, because the original Heavenly Bodies were Tom Pritchard and Stan Lane, right, or of the Midnight Express, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then Jimmy Del Rey takes over, I think, in toward 94, 95-ish. But, and that version was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
So he ends up going after Sean, slaps him in the corner, and actually almost gets him close to being eliminated. Then we have Head Shrinker Sione, who is the Barbarian, repackages one of the Head Shrinkers. Samu was gone, so it was Sione and Fatu, who of course was later Rikishi. That's sort of an odd fit, because I think Barbarian was a guy who was recognized enough who you would just be like, oh, that's the Barbarian.
Yeah.
You know, it had been like really only like 2 or 3 years since he'd been gone. So that was sort of a strange one. I mean, like something like, you know, Tony Atlas being Saba Simba, which was dumb, but Tony Atlas had been gone for long enough that a lot of the audience wouldn't have known who Tony Atlas was.
I had no idea when Saba Simba came on. I didn't know who Tony Atlas was either. So.
Right, exactly. I'm sure there were people who didn't know who Barbarian was, but still, I think that's smaller. That would be a, you know, a different thing. I don't know. It's kind of a weird choice, but whatever. He comes in, as I mentioned before, Captain Lou Albano and Afa are both his managers. At this point, the Headshrinkers are baby faces. They turn sometime in 94, I guess.
Right.
And Bulldog clotheslines Jimmy Del Rey over the top, ending his night pretty quickly. Sean tries to ram Sione's head into the turnbuckle, but does not successfully do so. I'm not sure if this is an instance of Sione having the Samoan hard head, or I know later we do have an instance of Fatu having a hard head. So that stereotype continues into 1995.
Yes. Also of note, Jimmy Del Rey is our first elimination, who came in at number 5. So,
yeah, Bulldog closed lined him over the top rope. So not a quick night for Jimmy Del Rey.
Yeah. And you're going to see that, like I said, you're going to see a lot of guys just sort of bunch up in the ring for a while.
Yeah, yeah. We have number 7, Tom Pritchard, who comes in during this time, Barbarian tries to press slam Michaels, but Michaels wiggles out of it. Michaels sort of hides in the corner while everyone else is engaged in fisticuffs, which Lawler notices is a good tactic. And then Bulldog eventually goes after him to not allow him to do that anymore. Number 8 is Doink, along with Dink, his little person mascot. And Doink gets a giant pop.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
It's been a while since we've had a guy who's like been in who's like a at least like sort of like a mainstay in WWF, because you know I think the Blue Twins are fairly new, Drosy was fairly new, the Heavenly Bodies kind of, but they weren't, you know, it's like a bunch of people who aren't really that over, aren't really new, so Doink's at least a guy who, okay, like, oh yeah, I know Doink, you know, I understand him, I'm happy to see him, yay, familiar face.
Right, the internet's never very clear on this, so I'm not quite sure who it is under the face paint. Might be Ray Apollo, might be Steve Lombardi.
Yeah, or who was the other one? Ray, no, not Ray Apollo, but somebody else. There's
that third guy.
Yeah, Ray Capitelli, or is Ray Apollo the same as Ray Capitelli?
Okay, I don't know.
Okay.
We know it's not Matt Bourne.
Yeah, who is the good one? So, right. Apparently Steve Kern, Steve Kern was the alternate Doink at WrestleMania 9, according to Wikipedia, which is not, of course, you know, you never want to be too, right. Okay, apparently Ray Apollo was the permanent replacement after a bunch of guys who were temporary. So really, the major ones were Matt Bourne and Ray Apollo.
Okay.
And the other ones were all, like, one-offs. Yeah, apparently. So, I don't know. We'll go with that as the truth. And if it's not the truth, someone should let me know on Twitter or somewhere to clear that up. So. But we'll just go ahead and go with that. So Doink goes after Sione and actually head scissors him down, which is sort of an interesting move to do in the Rumble, but was well done, you know? Even though the previous Doink is the one who was known for the great wrestling acumen, you know, he does okay there. So good on him. So Luke, what's that sound?
I believe it's the sound of 300 pounds of shit hitting the fan.
It is Quang. That is the sound.
I wish I could remember whose joke that is. It might be Scott Keith. It might
I believe Scott. It is. Yeah, or maybe something Scott Keith stole, because that was sort of what, you know, Rec Sport Pro Wrestling. I mean, not stole necessarily, but, you know, used. So, so Quang is next, which is unbelievable that Quang is still around at this point. But for those who do not know who Quang is, he's a Savio Vega in a ninja mask doing a martial arts gimmick, doing sort of like a really poor Great Muda, Great Suzuki, or Great Kabuki type gimmick.
Yeah, more like Kato from the Orient Express, really.
Yes. He spits the mist, and I guess the mask is a little bit fancier, but basically, yes.
Yeah.
So he goes after Doink right away. Not so much happens. Barbarian gets Pritchard by the throat. And then number 10, Rick Martel, who I had no idea was still around in WWE 95. I thought he had been gone like early 94. Maybe this was a one-time thing, but he they call him a veteran of Royal Rumbles and say that he has been in 7. But I think he was actually in 8, because I think he was in the 88 one, which they sort of they count sometimes and don't count other times. So, but either way, he was a guy who has been in a lot of Rumbles and did pretty well. So, Martel apparently is only in the Rumble in 95 and then is at a Quebec house show in 95, in which he turns babyface, apparently, to the Quebec crowd by attacking Shawn Michaels.
So, that would do it.
Yep. So. And then he and Doink sort of attack each other for a while. Quang has Sean hanging on the ropes, another Sean elimination tease. And then number 11 is Owen Hart, but he is immediately attacked from behind by Brett, who gets on top of him and punches him in the face repeatedly. The big thing being that Owen helped Bob Backlund cost Brett the title in their Survivor Series 94 submission match, when right. Owen persuades Helen, their mother, to throw in the towel. It's this big, elaborate, you know, thing where Owen pretends he's a changed man and cries and is like, I just don't want him to be hurt, blah, blah, and then fools her into doing that, and then has this, like, wonderful, like, ha-ha, I fooled you type celebration afterwards. So, so Brett's still upset about that.
Mom, it's amazing.
What's that?
I fooled you, Mom. It's an amazing moment for Owen Hart.
It is amazing. Yes, it's a wonderful it's a wonderful thing that I eventually will talk about being a main event of a podcast of a pay per view event. So that'll be fun. But So we mentioned here, or Vince says that Bret Hart is a changed man. He's more aggressive than we have ever seen him. So I guess Brett was going through some turmoil at this point. He'd also been involved in a very good and sort of forgotten match with Diesel at this event. It doesn't really have much of a finish. It's sort of a no decision type finish, but the match itself is really good.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of good action. Kevin Nash actually busts out a couple of moves that aren't in his normal repertoire. Mm-hmm. There's that intensity, and you see both guys kind of wrestle as heels for a while with all the cheating that they do. It's just really interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun match. I like it. I mean, I think their Survivor Series 95 match might be a little better, but it's they're on this nearly the same level. I mean, they're both very good. So there's not much else to recommend on this show other than, you know, other than that and somewhat the Rumble. But that's, you know, that's certainly worth it right there. That's a fun one. So
absolutely.
So Owen doesn't really, or I guess he does barely get into the ring right before number 12 is called. You see a guy come out, and I can't tell who it is at first because I don't know, you know, everyone on the 95 roster as well as I do some other years. And you hear a big pop, which you think it's because it happens right at the same time as he comes out, so you think it's for him, and then you realize that it's not anyone you're familiar with, so then it's very confused. And then they mention something about Owen being eliminated, and they're very unclear about that. And then we immediately have Duke the Dumpster Drosy eliminated, who lands on Earl Hebner, knocking him out. Then the new guy, who I had to look up and later discovered is Timothy Well, half of Well Done, is tossed by Davey Boy. And then right immediately afterwards, Sione backdrops Martel. And then Sean tosses Tom Pritchard. And then Doink almost gets dumped by Sione, but is able to stay on the apron. And then Quang super kicks him. And then Quang gets knocked out. And then Eli Blue clotheslines Sione out. So we basically clear the entire ring. Or I believe Eli Blue and Sione clothesline each other out. So basically we're down to through all that, that all happens in that 60 seconds. Bushwhacker Luke comes in at number 13, but then gets dumped by Sean very quickly. So now basically we're Sean and Bulldog again. And they also do mention that Luke had the record for lowest, the shortest amount of time, which they later changed to Warlord. I think Warlord and Luke were sort of tied at one point or whatever. I think Santino has it now anyway, so that's sort of irrelevant. Not that it was really relevant, quote unquote, anytime. But the important thing is, okay, now we're down to Sean and Bulldog. Number one and two are here really just 13 minutes later, so not really like a huge amount of time, but you know, they're, this is still notable because this doesn't happen in the Rumble.
Right. We're almost halfway through the field, and it's almost like nothing has changed and that we've got the same two guys out there. Only they're just a lot more tired.
Right. Yeah. Even a little more tired because, again, 13 minutes, you know, later, you just don't get the same sort of like sense of accomplishment. I mean, you know, I think the story works fine, but it certainly would have been aided by, you know, a longer thing for sure.
Well, and I feel like there's some specific reasons why they only did 60 seconds, which I may get into later.
Okay. Oh, I would love for you to get into them. Absolutely. So, number 14 is Jacob Blue, the other Harris twin, who gets a hard clothesline on Shawn Michaels. He then charges after Michaels, but is dumped right away. So not a long night for him. Davey picks up Shawn again and then almost gets him out, but Shawn definitely hangs onto the ropes to keep from being eliminated. Number 15 is King Kong Bundy, who I always kind of forget about Bundy's like 95 run in WWE. It was just sort of like he was gone for so long that it was so weird to see him come back. And he looked basically the same. He looked a little older, but like it wasn't a huge difference. But he was just it was like one of those things, like it had been so long that he seemed like an old guy, even though he didn't really look like one.
Right. I mean, he'd been gone for something like, I want to say 8 or 9 years.
His last, I think he's in the WrestleMania 4 Battle Royal. I believe that's the last thing of note that he did.
Okay, so almost 7 years then.
Right. Yeah, so he was a whole different era. I mean, he was a big deal when he was gone for sure. But, you know, it wasn't like he... it was just sort of a different era. And I'm sorry, Bundy was at the Survivor Series 87. He was not at the the Battle Royal at Mania 4. So closer to 8 years. But regardless, it'd been a while. So
yeah. Well, he was a guy that they brought in to feud with The Undertaker, basically.
Yeah. Right, which they have the WrestleMania 11 match together. So, I liked Bundy a lot. Like, Bundy's match with Hogan at WrestleMania 2, I think, is kind of vastly underrated. I don't think much of the Undertaker-Bundy match, though I haven't seen it in a long time, and nothing Bundy did really at this point impressed me. But I'm kind of surprised Bundy didn't end up in WCW a couple years later, you know, or, well, I guess he was in WCW this time because he was in WWE, but, you know, even later in the 90s, you know, I'm surprised he wasn't the guy they brought in for something.
But
for whatever reason, didn't happen. They show a replay of Owen being eliminated by Davey. So basically he comes in and he gets tossed out right away by Davey. Bundy tries to dump Bulldog, and then Sean attacks Bundy for some reason. So he punches Sean down when he goes behind his back. Mo of Men on a Mission comes in, and then immediately is backdropped by Bundy, which they say may have broken Luke's record, but I've never heard of that one as being one of the ones that they consider the shortest. So I don't know if they just forget or if they just don't want to include Mo in their history for whatever reason, but, you know.
I seem to remember that one being considered the shortest for a while, and then at some point they switched it back to the Warlord, which I believe actually was until Santino broke it.
I'm glad I have you here for this to get the trivia, which of course you know is sort of what you do on Twitter, the Sophia account, which we talk about more at the end. But you're a man who likes to bring the records and bring the stats and bring the pertinent info, which I do enjoy.
And the impertinent info is I throw out a lot of useless trivia in there too.
Right. The impertinent info may even be better than the pertinent info. But regardless, so then number 17 is Mabel. So we get a good old battle of the fatties between Mabel and King Kong Bundy, which I always enjoy because I'm a big proponent of fat on fat violence. So
it is something sadly lacking in today's product.
It is a little bit. Yeah, we do need a few more fatties. I do feel like that's a thing we need to encourage. You know, you can only do Big Show Mark Henry so many times. I mean, it's fun, but, you know, it's nice to get a. Nice to get a mix of fatties in there. So they go face to face and stomach to stomach. They clubber for a while. Then they get tired out, and Mabel tries to lift him over the ropes. In fact, actually, he does get him off his feet, and very, very slowly he's able to budge Bundy and get him kind of over, and then Bundy eventually slides out off the apron. It is probably the most gentle over-the-top bump you can take on Bundy's part, but he does it. He's out. So Mabel wins the battle of fatties.
Well done, Mabel.
Yes. So thus proving himself for his later run in 95 as a main eventer. I don't know if that's what they were thinking at this point. I hope they weren't thinking that at this point, but
wish they'd never thought that.
Yeah, didn't really work out for Mabel at that point. I mentioned before, I think Mabel got really good. Well, you know, good for his size and good for, you know, good under certain conditions. But I think he worked pretty well, as you know, in a, you know, mid-level role in the late 90s and really more even in like the mid-2000s when he came back. But at this point, I mean, he was tremendously young. He was like 21 or 22 at this point. And didn't have the experience and didn't really have, Men on a Mission was okay for what they were doing, you know, as far as their tag team and being kind of the goofy comedy guys. But to go from that to being the main event, especially in that era, just wasn't something that was really hard to accept.
Right. And something else to note about this Rumble is that there have been a lot of tag team wrestlers in it. I believe I ended up counting up, and there's like six dedicated tag teams who both members appear in this. Meanwhile, earlier in the show, they had a match of the tag team titles, which was basically between four singles wrestlers.
That's interesting. Yes. That is interesting to point out. Yeah, Bob Holly and 123 Kid, who were the – well, I guess this was the titles were vacant at this point. So Bob Holly and 123 Kid win the titles. I believe they, like, lose them, like, the next night to the Smoking Guns or something. Yeah.
They lost the Smoking Guns the next night on Raw.
Right. So a dedicated tag team does get it back very quickly. But I don't really remember the story behind that. Do you remember the story behind? I guess that stemmed from Sean and Diesel's breakup, right?
Right. Yeah. They vacated the titles, and then they had a tournament to crown the new ones. But the Bart Gunn got hurt. At least Vince actually brings this up in the commentary.
Right.
Bart got hurt at rodeo.
Yes.
And so they had to drop out of the second round and were replaced by Bob Holly and the 1-2-3 Kid.
Ah, okay. Well, very good. So next we have Butch, Bushwhacker Butch, who also does not fare well. He is dumped pretty quickly by Shawn Michaels. And also, I forgot to mention that apparently King Kong Bundy was Vince's pick to win the match. So surprising that he did not win if Vince wanted him to win. But, you know. Yeah, you would think Vince would have a little bit of power in that. But what can you do?
Yeah.
Number 19 is Lex Luger, who comes in. He dumps Mabel quickly. Attacks Michaels. For the third time, Michaels is pressed in the air by one of these men and, again, is not thrown over the top. So they're really trying hard not to eliminate Shawn Michaels. We have both Luger and Bulldog. They were not the Allied Powers yet, but they were soon to be the Allied Powers. But they apparently were not strong enough. Even though they were strong enough to foil Germany, they were not strong enough to eliminate Shawn Michaels from this match.
Well, apparently Shawn Michaels' ego is more powerful than the Nazis.
I believe there's a possibility that's true. So, number 20. Mantar.
Mantar.
What can we say about Mantar?
All right, look. If you look at his hair, massive eyebrows, whatever the hell he's got going on there, you just think he had to go out in public looking like that.
Yes. And he had sort of, his hair was sort of like a horn-shaped hair.
Yep.
He was, you know, probably like 375, like a, you know, big powerlifter kind of type wrestler. He didn't seem terrible. I don't know anything about him. I don't think I've ever seen him do anything else. But I don't think I've ever seen him outside of this match. So,
he was around for a while and did the, like, Monster Man gimmick. And, eventually went away.
Yeah. He apparently was in ECW. Briefly. But as Bruiser Mastino.
Yeah, not aware of that one. I do know.
Just for a few weeks, so.
He was one of the original members of the Truth Commission.
Oh.
But he'd only appeared in the WWE for, like, a few weeks before he got replaced by Sniper. Who was Bull Buchanan?
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah, I've just gotten to that particular era on WrestleFeed, so I'm up on that particular trivia.
Ah, okay. Well, very cool. Very cool. Vince goes on and on. This man is a beast, and he goes on and on about how big he is and how powerful he is. And he and Lawler make a lot of. Not quite puns, but certainly, you know, do a lot of comparing him to, you know, using lots of descriptive language that indicates his, you know, animalness, we should say.
Right.
Yeah. He ends up hip tossing and elbow dropping Davey. Number 21, Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese Man of War, is our next combatant. And boy, was that mask look a lot like a yellow jockstrap.
Yep.
Yes. And that was basically what he was best known for. He is, for those who do not know, he is the future Just Incredible.
Right. He had been a jobber for a few years before this and actually had picked up a win over IRS as part of that, like, Razor Ramon, 1-2-3 Kid, Million Dollar Man feud that had gone on. And then, yeah, did this horrible, horrible thing. And later, Just Incredible, a fantastic name for a mediocre wrestler.
Yes. Just Unbearable would be some people would consider his ECW reign. Although he has his defenders, too. I did a podcast with somebody who's a big Just Incredible fan, who I normally have very strong, who I believe has very good opinions about wrestling, is very smart, and so forth. So, you know, not everyone in there doesn't like Just Incredible yet. But yes, he was, you know, maybe not the best ECW world champion.
Right. This is one of the great mysteries of 1995 is why anyone thought this was a good idea for him.
Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, it was colorful. It was a mask. I mean, I guess he kind of do like a, you know, like a colorful like superhero type thing almost, or you know, a colorful mask wrestler type thing. I mean, I get why that might work in concept, but you know, first of all, Portugal, like you know, who really has feelings about Portugal one way or the other? And
only soccer fans.
Right. And the mask, you know, it just sort of like, okay, it's just weird. So, yeah, not a good decision. Not a lot of good judgments by Vince during this era. Yeah. Kind of left into the Attitude Era a little bit, I think.
Right.
Yeah. That was more luck than skill for the most part, I think. I mean, they took advantage of it, certainly. But yeah. So, number 22 is Henry Godwin. Henry O. Godwin. During this time, Lawler makes a joke comparing Henry Godwin's popularity in Arkansas to Bill Clinton's, and Vince, who normally objects to Lawler's jokes, actually says that he gives him that one, which is funny given what we know about Vince's politics.
Right. And also, I don't recall Clinton being that unpopular in Arkansas at the time, so the joke doesn't really work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how popular Henry Godwin was in Arkansas during that time. So
that's true. They may have loved him.
Yeah. So, and I guess we don't have Phineas yet. It's just Henry Godwin. Phineas hasn't joined the team yet.
No, Phineas, I think, would join either late this year or sometime the next year. Because Henry was a single star for quite a while.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
He ended up turning face at one point and had a feud with Triple H.
Oh, so he's a heel at this point.
Yeah, he was a heel to start.
Oh, I did not know that.
Don't remember which event had Helmsley and Godwin in the infamous hog pen match.
I feel like that's like a December 95 pay-per-view. But
something right.
Yeah. But I don't remember what it's called either. But it's around that time. I know that. Number 23 is Billy Gunn, the other half, or well, I guess the first half of the Smoking Guns. He goes after Mantar, I guess, you know, because of the horns, he's used to going after a bull.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then this is when, of course, the rodeo injury is mentioned that Bart Gunn had, and that they will face the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly, who had won the tag championships earlier, and we've discussed the result with that. Number 24 is Bart Gunn, and this is the second time in this Rumble that tag partners have come out back-to-back. Although, you know, we'll give it some credit because, of course, there are six tag teams, 12 spots. So that's numerically, you have at least a better chance of that than you would under normal circumstances. Like, it happened three times in the 89 Rumble. So,
right.
At this point, Vince calls Luger the favorite, which I guess he did pretty well at the previous Rumble, so that sort of makes sense. Number 25 is Mr. Bob Backlund, who gets very, very large amount of heat, takes his time to come in, and then Bret Hart comes from the back again and goes after him too. You can tell that he is not a happy camper, and he gets on Backlund and punches him out a bunch too. We have a bunch of officials come out to break it up. And then next, Stephen Dunn comes in, the other half of the other half of Well Done.
Right.
And Harvey Whippleman is their manager. Luger immediately clotheslines Backlund out from behind. And then Brett goes right after Backlund again, attacks him again. And we have another pull apart. So that was pretty fun, you know.
Yeah.
Although, you
know, that led back to the world title match earlier in the show, because partway through, Shawn Michaels had attacked Diesel, a little bit later Owen Hart, and then towards the end Bob Backlund had attacked Bret Hart. So
yeah, that's a good point. That's not just him being mad over the Survivor Series stuff, but more stuff had happened recently that night even. So and of course we're building to the Bob Backlund Bret Hart I Quit match at WrestleMania 11, which is one of the worst Bret Hart matches I've ever seen. not his fault, really. Just everything. It was just sort of goofy comedy and Piper being in there and kind of making himself kind of the match instead of the, you know, the big issue, and sort of being mid-cardy and cartoonish. It was just not a good thing. So now we do need to let it be said that It is a little bit of a surprise because we do know that Bret Hart is not known for holding a grudge.
No, no, not at all.
Yeah, we've never seen an instance of Bret like having difficulty letting something go.
I cannot think of a single time when that happened.
Exactly, exactly. Number 27, of all people, is Dick Murdoch, who is wonderful to see.
Oh, yeah. Well, so he's one of those guys that it's something that became tradition, is that they would pull a few names out of the past and have them come in, and anyone who recognized them would be excited. I think Rick Martel was another example of that earlier on.
Yeah, but Martel was, you know, he at least was a recent guy. I mean, Murdoch, sure, you know, hadn't been around since like 84 or 85 maybe. So, but I mean, good to see him. Vince mentioned that he had that tag title reign a long time ago with Adrian Adonis. Murdoch goes right after Sean. Gets a lot of licks on Sean actually here and there. We see Mantar missing a big splash during this time. Number 28 is Adam Bomb. Now, maybe you can tell me, was Adam Bomb babyface here?
At the time, yes. He'd started out, Harvey Whippleman was his manager as well.
Right.
He had the weird goggles and the tongue painted red.
Right.
And at some point, yeah, he had turned face, abandoned Harvey, and had gone on to do nothing, really.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because he does, you know, he's like all pumped up and all amped and rock star, right? And I'm like, you're acting like a good guy. I don't remember you ever being a good guy. But yeah, he didn't last that much longer, I don't think. So,
no.
Yeah. Although he goes right after Davey. I mean, not that really matters because, you know, of course, every man for himself. But for the most part, we were kind of sticking with bad guys and fighting good guys and good guys fighting bad guys, with a few exceptions. But for the most part, it wasn't like there was a whole lot of going against your side going on here.
Right.
So number 29 is Fatu, the other head shrinker. He and Billy Gunn trade blows, and he nearly dumps Billy. Adam Bomb has Sean on the ropes, and right as this happens, Luger tosses Mantar. And now we're down to number 30, Crush. And there are a total of 12 guys in right at the very moment that Crush comes in.
Right.
But almost immediately, Crush and Murdoch dump the smoking guns as they're fighting each other, which I guess was a long tease for them to event. I guess they really didn't break up until 96, right?
Yeah, I think it was when Sonny had gotten involved with the tag team that she sort of pushed that wedge and Billy turned heel.
Yeah, didn't they tease fighting at one? Or did they? Maybe, I'm thinking of when they turned heel. Maybe they teased like fighting, and or maybe they just teased turning heel. I seem to remember something along those times where they teased a breakup but didn't actually do it. But maybe I'm misthinking.
It's possible, and I think actually the team itself had wrestled as heels for a while before the breakup.
Okay. Yeah. So we have Crush and Murdoch dump smoking guns. And then Aldo dumps out Stephen Dunn. So we now know that Aldo Montoya is actually slightly above someone in the pecking order. So
no.
That's a good thing.
It's sad to see Well Done go so quickly because I think they hold the record, possibly the record for worst dressed tag team.
Yeah. Well Done was definitely over easy in this match.
Damn it.
Yeah. I did kind of mix my eggs and my meat there, but we'll just go with it. We do have the future members of Chronic, that being Crush and Adam Bomb, battling in one corner, which is, it would be fun if they weren't both so incredibly crappy. But we have a Murdoch battling with Montoya a bit, which is basically a complete study in opposites in badassery. And Aldo stomps down on Luger too, so this is like by far Aldo's best showing, probably anything ever, I would have to say.
Probably right.
WWE career, yeah. Murdoch almost gets Sean out, but Luger for some reason breaks it up. And Lawler and Vince get into it, whether Luger was trying to break it up or trying to do something else. But then Luger helps him later again, so it's kind of a weird thing. Then we have Murdoch and Fatu both on the ground sort of doing the JYD style like crawling on the ground like a dog and hitting their head with the headbutts. But this is where Fatu's head is too hard to, be hurt, because of course he's Samoan and he has a hard head. The fun wrestling stereotype that we all love.
I like it when they just limit that to Samoans, but when they attribute it to all darker skin races, then that's a bit unfortunate.
Well, it's kind of unfortunate for Samoans too, but you get that. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I don't know. I guess it makes a little more sense with the characters, even though like it is horribly racist and silly. But at least like with the Islander style characters, it's kind of like they are portraying like beastly type people, you know, which is, again, you know, we don't need to have like a whole, you know, discussion of stereotypes and so on and so forth, but at least like that trait sort of more fits the character that they're presenting than just, yeah, normal people of color have hard heads type thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, this random thing that I remember from this is when they had the head shrinkers wearing boots, which caused them problems for a long time during their early face days.
Yeah, I remember during the Survivor Series in particular, 94, that being a thing that was troublesome for them. That didn't really come to play here as much, but I remember that being a story. And another lovely, very, very sensitive story that we're telling.
Yes.
Yes. So,
I'm getting the impression that, especially in the mid-90s, maybe the WWE could have done a bit better job in their concern for other cultures.
Possibly, yeah. I think you have a very good point there. But they definitely, you know what, if they may not have had cultures down very well, but representing occupations, they had that down pat.
Absolutely.
Yes. So Crush dumps his future partner over the top, and Vince called Atom Bomb one of his favorites, being surprised that he did not last very long. But the same thing happened in the previous WrestleMania, the previous Rumble. So Vince just doesn't have a great memory, I guess.
No.
Crush is able to get Fatu over, but not quite all the way. Crush is then super kicked by Fatu, pretty hard super kick, if I recall. Aldo is dumped by Sean, and then Luger saves Sean from Murdoch again. And then finally Crush is able to get Fatu over after a few efforts. And then Murdoch, of all people, gets high up in the air to get a drop kick on Henry Godwin. Then he does an airplane spin, and Henry's feet nail Sean while he's doing the spin. Then Murdoch sets him down, is dizzy, and then he tumbles over the ropes and goes to the ground. And then Henry also tumbles over, but is able to hold on to the ropes and not be eliminated. So that was a fun little spot with Murdoch. Murdoch does a couple of creative things during the match that, you know, makes his appearance memorable, if not brief.
Yeah, the airplane spin bit was a lot of fun.
Yes, yes. So, actually, Murdoch was, he died in 96, so he wasn't, I mean, you know, he's still another year and a half of his life, but he was obviously, you know, he died very young, but he was near the, relatively near the end of his life here. Then we have Sean attacking Luger in the corner. Godwin helps out for a little bit. Godwin runs into Luger's boots, is clotheslined down, and then he makes the mistake that a lot of people make of charging into his opponent who is on the ropes, and his opponent ducks and dumps him over. So now we're down to Sean, Bulldog, Luger, and Crush. Bulldog is hammered by Sean with a forearm. Then he and Crush try to dump Luger. Sean and Crush do. Luger fends them off with his forearms, possibly of steel, possibly not of steel, depending on the day of whether he has that or not. Sean knocks out Luger when he knocks Luger out of the ring when Luger very stupidly tries the 10 punches on Crush and standing in the corner. And Vince calls it a tremendous disappointment for Lex Luger, which pretty much, you know, what else is new? That pretty much tremendous disappointment for Lex Luger is kind of the mode for his career.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, coming up short in big situations.
Absolutely.
I guess he did get that Nitro win over Hogan, so we'll give him that.
Yeah. And I'm sure he had runs with the WCW heavyweight title, but never did get it in the E.
Yeah, he did not. So, So at this point, Crush and Sean just decide to unite. They pull off the, they do a high 10, and they go after Davey. But it doesn't take long for Crush to, being the untrustworthy Hawaiian that he is, he turns on Shawn Michaels. We get Crush presses Shawn, but Shawn is able to actually get this one on his out of this one on his own by raking Crush's face. Shawn, Davey goes for a clothesline on Shawn. Shawn ducks, and then it sends Crush over the top rope and to the floor. So we are down to numbers 1 and 2, Shawn and Davey Boy Smith, about 39 minutes into the match. And then Shawn ducks his head, and Davey sort of goalposts him, kicks his belly into the corner, right as sort of as Shawn does sort of the whole thing where he's like, his body's hanging on the turnbuckle, and then he repeatedly is kicked by his opponent up, and he keeps flying up. And then on the last one, he crotches himself on the ropes and goes down. Then Davey clotheslines Shawn over the top. We see Shawn hold onto the ropes, but we don't get the shot that we normally would get of Shawn on the other side seeing his feet and seeing him fall to the floor. And then we go to a very tight shot of Davey celebrating on the ropes. Very odd camera work. And granted, we know what's happening. It's going to be that Shawn's only one of his feet touched the floor. But the way it's set up, it just seems so weird. I get why they hit it, but at the same time, like, they didn't do the best job of covering their tracks because they shot it so differently than they normally would.
Yeah. It's still a great finish, though. One of the best from any of the Rumbles, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very good. Yeah. It's just sort of like, I mean, basically you have Davey up on the ropes, and then suddenly by surprise, well, they cut out a little bit. So you do see Shawn coming from behind, and then immediately he nails Davey, and Davey falls over the top and onto the floor. And Davey's music is already played, and Vince sort of says, oh, Shawn's out, Davey's the winner. I don't know if the bell rings or not. I didn't catch whether the
bell does not.
I'm sorry?
It does not. It
does not ring. Okay. But the music plays, and he does the celebrating, and yeah, as I described, at this point, then there's a big pop when Shawn wins the Rumble, by the way. Then we get to a replay pretty quickly, and they show only one of Shawn's feet hit the floor. I think Finkel makes the announcement first, and then they show the replay. Unlike in 94 Rumble, when they have that disputed finish between Luger and Brett, and they don't show the replay until the next Raw, I believe. But they don't show it live at the event, so.
Yeah, I remember at the 94 Rumble, they had a lot of different camera angles, and none of them showed the moment when either man hit the floor.
Exactly, yeah, they spent a long time on it, as a matter of fact. But yeah, they do not show when he hit the floor. So Pamela Anderson comes to the ring, sort of stands behind Shawn when he poses, clearly not particularly interested in these proceedings, though I think it's more meant to be that she's not impressed with Shawn Michaels because he's a bit of a douche, not so much that, you know, she's not so crazy about wrestling. I think she's acting and not just not being interested, but it's hard to tell, I guess.
That may be giving her a lot of credit.
Well, you know, I believe that she is quite, as I described before, I think has quite an evil mind. So I have to give someone with an evil mind a little bit of credit for having evil plots.
All right, that's fair.
Thank you. So, and that's basically it. Shawn Michaels celebrates, and we are done with the 1995 Royal Rumble. So, and then after this, Shawn goes in to challenge Diesel at WrestleMania. He loses, and in what I have never really considered much of a match, honestly, there's kind of differing opinions on that, but to me that Diesel Michaels match is really disappointing. I don't know if it's just the smaller man being the heel, or if it's just sort of an off night for them, or particularly for Shawn, obviously, or what have you. But it's never been one of my favorites.
It was even not the main event of WrestleMania 11, because right. that was reserved for Bam Bam Bigelow and Lawrence Taylor.
Sure. But, I mean, it was treated as a big deal. I mean, it was the second match. They had all the celebrities come out. I mean, it wasn't like they underplayed it, you know. It just yeah. wasn't the final match. Which is, of course, not unusual today for the title match not to be the final match. But, you know, back then, yes. I mean, back then, obviously, it happened at WrestleMania 8, but it wasn't a usual thing.
Right, yeah. Usually you'd get the big belt at the end of the show, but there's always the exceptions.
Sure. Anything else you can think of to talk about as far as the Rumble event goes, or anything surrounding it?
Well, there's as you watch it now, it kind of becomes obvious, you know, what they were trying to do and why they made some of these decisions. Mm-hmm. With the 60-second intervals, I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that there was almost no star power in this Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. You've got, I would say, at most three guys that you would trust to headline WrestleMania. Shawn Michaels, and even he was still like mid-carter on his way up at the time.
Right.
Maybe British Bulldog, who sort of on that same level as Michaels, and Lex Luger.
Yeah. You could make the case for Owen Hart as well, but really he'd already spent so much time headlining that to go back to him didn't make any sense. But he was a guy who would have been at that level as well. But no one else is even close.
Yeah. I mean, Backlund had headlined a pay-per-view as recently as the Survivor Series, but right after that, he had dropped the title in like 8 seconds to Diesel, so you wouldn't throw him back.
That was a novelty thing, you know. So that wasn't going to – right, exactly.
There was a lot of new guys. There were a lot of tag teams. I mean, almost half the field was tag teams, and then I think only six people lasted as long as 10 minutes. And, you know, there was the big three there, Michaels, Luger, and Bulldog, and then it was Henry Godwin, Aldo Montoya, and Eli Blue. Mm-hmm. And everyone else was, you know, just much, much less than that. You just, you know, you had those moments where the talent bunches up in the ring, someone big comes in, then everyone goes flying.
And most Rumbles, I think, are kind of three acts, but really this one is kind of compressed into two because you really, and I don't know if they're really that separated, but you have basically the point in which Davey and Sean are alone in the ring together after, you know, that flurry, and then Sean eliminates Luke, and you have them in the ring together again for just a little bit, and then the next part begins with there, and then Bundy and Mabel, you know, the Battle of the Fatties, and then the ring kind of filling up again with a bunch of new people, and then, you know, leading to the finish. I mean, that's really kind of basically where I would sort of link it. You know, there's not really like a final like third, but there isn't really any slow points necessarily. There are definitely, you know, you like I said, it gets pretty crowded in there, but there's no, at no point did I feel this dragged.
Yeah. And that's one of the benefits of having the 60 seconds is that there's always something new happening.
Yeah. But you definitely don't have the same, like, you know, sense of accomplishment or sense of like, wow. I mean, it's a good story, but you don't feel like it's the same level of accomplishment as something as what Flair did, for instance. It's not even close to that, you know.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. I think your theory makes perfect sense. Yeah, I think, you know, you do notice that of all the Rumbles, this is definitely the least, you know, that I could ever think of as far as having the fewest main eventers or guys who realistically have any chance of winning or even, you know, guys who I necessarily know. I mean, there are several guys here who I'm, you know, it took me a minute to figure out who they were. And now granted this, you know, this wasn't a time which I was watching a whole lot, but I've seen, you know, older stuff too. It just, you know, it's guys who weren't around long enough for me to make a real big impression on me.
Right. One of the other things is that you can really tell that they've made their decision to sort of like double down on Shawn Michaels here, because he's kind of, it's pretty much the Shawn Michaels show is what goes on here. He has the most eliminations. He is, well, he's tied for the longest time spent in the ring. Of course he wins. So, there's like 10 times where he is almost eliminated. And that's not counting all the times that someone just lifts him up and then they get their eyes raked or whatever. But like 10 times where he's almost out, over the top rope, pushing against the apron or clinging onto the ropes or something. And the announcers talk about him a lot more than they do Bulldog or Luger or anyone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're right. Yeah, they do definitely. I mean, they certainly get behind him for, I mean, and I guess it was kind of the point where they were trying anything. And, you know, they'd been building the Shawn Diesel storyline for a while anyway, you know, them being friends and partners and, right. And, you know, Diesel breaking away. So, you know, I mean, it made sense to do this story and so on and so forth. But, and Shawn obviously, you know, was young and talented and popular. And so it made sense, even despite his size, which was still an obstacle at this point. You know, even so, it made sense to have him, you know, have him be there. I mean, he was, you know, kind of filling the Mr. Perfect role for to Diesel's Hulk Hogan, let's say, you know, to kind of pick a feud that Hogan had, one of his, not necessarily his biggest feuds, but what, you know, a feud that wasn't monster versus monster feud anyway. So kind of the same thing without the backstory, of course. So,
yep. And they really needed a main event heel at the time because there was a serious dearth of them.
Yeah.
The big name guys, you had Diesel, Bret Hart, Undertaker, maybe sort of on the outskirts, Razor Ramon, were all faces.
Right.
I think like the last big heel they had was maybe Yokozuna, and they were already, you know, deep pushing him.
Right.
And so you've got to have someone out there for the good guys to go against. And Shawn Michaels fit the bill.
Sure.
And he did that for a while. He had his face turn later in 95. Which then set up him winning the Royal Rumble again and then winning the title in at WrestleMania 12.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it worked out well for him, and probably the first failure added a little bit of juice to the second success too.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about WrestleFeed?
All right. WrestleFeed is a project that I do on Twitter, wherein I will do sort of like live Twitter commentary on an old pay-per-view. This actually started when I'd rented WrestleMania 6 from Netflix and was commenting on my regular account. And someone just said, "Is this what you're doing? Because that's hilarious." And so I've started to do that regularly. I started with the first WrestleMania, and I've been doing their big four pay-per-views. I just finished Survivor Series 97, which is the show that had the infamous Montreal Screwjob, mm-hmm. which I'd actually never seen that show before. And I'd seen a lot of the aftermath of the Screwjob, but not the match itself.
Right.
And the ending to that is really weird.
A little bit, yes.
There are people who speculate that, you know, a lot of people were in on it, and I really don't think that's the case, just judging by the way that show ends. Because there's the fake call for the submission while Brett is in the midst of reversing the sharpshooter, the brief commentary from Ross and Lawler, and then they end the show within a minute. And I think that ended up being like 15 minutes before they were supposed to go off the air. So,
yeah. Yeah. I you know, there's, of course it's been dissected, over and over again, but yeah, you know, it certainly, you're absolutely right. Is what I'm trying to say in more words than I need to.
All right. Well, I do a lot of that myself.
Yes.
And then I have a couple running gags that I do with WrestleFeed. Most prevalent is the dead count, wherein I will mark off whenever a wrestler shows up who is currently dead.
Mm-hmm.
Currently dead. Like they're going to be not dead later.
Right.
But
wrestling zombies, perhaps.
Oh, jeez. There is the dumbest man in wrestling, which, you know, someone like a lot of that would be, I think, I want to say with this pay-per-view, I'd announce it to be Luger for all the times he saved Shawn Michaels from being eliminated.
Yes.
But yeah, there's always those things that happen in a wrestling match where logically a guy wouldn't do something, but that's the way that they progress the story of the match. So that's what they have to do. Mm-hmm. And see, I've got, according to Wiki, where I just pull facts about wrestlers off their Wikipedia page. I'm not big on research. And, you know, and repeat those. And those can be a lot of fun. I think a good one, I probably busted this out during King Kong Bundy's earlier run. I may have mentioned it during the 95 Rumble, that King Kong Bundy is currently a stand-up comedian.
Yes. He's on Twitter, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, follow him. And I've got a few other things like that. I stick with mostly WWE pay-per-views simply because those are easiest to get a hold of. I have done a few Clash the Champions. I've done a few ECW shows.
Well, cool. Well, I always enjoy seeing those tweets, and definitely a fun time. So, thanks so much for being on the show. Is there anything else you want to mention?
No, just thanks for having me, and I hope to be invited back sometime.
Absolutely. And thanks, everyone, of course, for listening. You can check us out at WrestleSpective.com, where we have post all of our podcasts and different video and photos that are connected to the podcast and various thoughts and other things every once in a while, and all the different ways in which you can subscribe and follow and so on and so forth and find old shows and do pretty much whatever you'd want to do is at WrestleSpective.com. So please check it out. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back again soon.